Wendy, a very good morning, and welcome to Chai.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me.
It's a difficult conversation. It's certainly not an easy conversation to have, and I'm not sure that on a Wednesday morning, as people drive into work, they want to talk about end-of-life agreements. But I guess it's a reality, and it's something that we have to address in one form or another.
You know, they don't want to talk about it on a Wednesday morning driving to work.
Right.
But they don't want to talk about it at any time.
Well, I understand that.
So,
I guess I probably would be that as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'll discuss it another time. I just don't want to talk about
it. But the fact is that Wednesday morning is a good idea because here I am, and I hope that by the time I've finished talking to you, you're not going to be able to wait to have that discussion.
Right. Howard, what's your thoughts on it?
So I want to know what my rights are. Do I have a right to die?
Right. Let me...
Well, why don't you go get straight into it then, Howard? Yes.
Howard, let me start at the beginning of this. The most important aspect of this is firstly dealing with end-of-life conversations, end-of-life discussions. You have a right to die with dignity. You have a right to express what you want. You should be expressing what you want.
And how do I do it? Do
right.
I do it in a document? Do I tell my family? Do
Let
I tell
me tell
my
you.
Doctor?
The biggest obstacle to end-of-life agreements is the fact that people don't talk to each other. Families don't talk to each other.
Right.
It's a conversation that no one wants to have. You know what the amazing thing is? I'm not medically trained. Let me say that at the outset. I'm legally trained.
Right.
Everyone spends an enormous amount of time, money, effort, enthusiasm on doing their wills. Why are they doing their wills? Because they know they're going to die, and they want to deal with their assets in a way that they want their family to be left with memories of them in respect of their wishes.
And not to, in fact, land up fighting around certain
things.
And
not land up fighting.
Right. And
because they know they're going, everyone's going to die, they know that. But why does no one, or should I say very few people, spend time with their families having conversations on how they want to die or how they want to live their life until they die. And as a result of this enormous elephant in the room, when people become terminally ill, there is so much there's often so much anxiety, confusion, and conflict in families that the process of looking after and caring and having quality time with that person is often totally eroded.
Right, because you're all trying to figure out what is best for the person, what that person would want. But in fact, it's very, very hard to do that because everybody's emotionally involved.
Yes.
So it actually becomes what you want, not what that person would want.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Right.
So the first thing that every family needs to do is sit down. You know, life is, you know, they say life is not what you plan, it's what happens to you. And none of us know what today is going to hold. So sit your family down. It may not be a parent, God forbid, it could be a child. And talk about what do you want? What do you want? The most important thing for a person is to be able to die with dignity. The patient's autonomy is so important. Every patient, every person has a right to refuse treatment. When I was on Chai FM a few months ago, someone called in and said, what does the Torah say about euthanasia? I want to just say at the outset, this is not about euthanasia.
No, and I don't want it to become that. I want it to become
about... It's not about it, and I don't want people to be sitting at home thinking, what is she talking about?
So what is it about? So what are some of the decisions that one would have to, one would include in a living will?
Right. So what is a living will? A living will embodies a concept of not being kept alive if there's no prospect of reasonable recovery. And what actually is reasonable recovery? Reasonable recovery means, can I make a cognitive decision? Am I able to function? Am I able to function mentally? Am I able to function on any level physically? Now, at this time, a living will is not legally recognized in our law. It's not legally binding. But that doesn't mean that it's not accepted.
Yeah, and in fact, it's not a, I wouldn't say a way out, but it actually gives the family an indication as to what that person would want to decide at that moment.
And it gives a medical profession an indication of that.
So let's reduce it to its most harsh.
Right.
I write a document that says, if, for example, I'm in a car accident, I'm in a coma, I want you to pull the plug. No, I mean, realistically,
That word that you always read about it, pull the plug.
No, but realistically, if there's no prospects of a recovery, a mental capacity recovery, if I'm going to have no quality of life thereafter, I don't want to be kept alive by machines. So let us say I have that instruction.
Yes.
Who do I give it to make sure?
So that's an interesting, exactly. Where does it sit?
Right. I'll tell you where it sits. Now, there's going to be an amendment to the National Health Act, hopefully, possibly even this year, that will make a living will a legally binding document. Now, there's something called an advance directive. And that is the same as a living will, except it has more detail. In terms of an advance directive, you can appoint a medical proxy to act on your behalf. Now, this is called a durable power of attorney. What's very important is that, I'm just diverting a bit from what you asked. When one thinks of a power of attorney, I'm going to get a power of attorney from my mother in case she's not well enough, in case she's incapacitated, in case whatever. A power of attorney, what is it? You stand in the shoes of that person and act on their behalf.
Right.
And what most people don't know about a power of attorney is that it is only valid while you are mentally competent.
Right. So the minute that you're incapacitated in that way, then that power of attorney ceases to be valid.
There are many attorneys who don't even know that, who don't even know that a power of attorney ceases to exist if someone should become mentally incapacitated.
Right.
Now, this new act is going to be exceptional in that you'll be able to have what's called a durable power of attorney.
So it would survive the duration of incapacity.
Well, it would only kick in. It will only kick in should that patient be mentally incapacitated. So Howard, back to your question, you're now in a car accident. You have what's called an advance directive. You have someone who is now going to stand in your shoes and act on your behalf. It's got to be someone who knows you well. It's got to be someone who has the same kind of values as you. It can't be someone who cares for you for remuneration. There can be no kind
of
conflict of interest in it. The most important thing about this is that your family knows about it. You say to them, this is what I want, and I want you to act on it. You shouldn't even know, you shouldn't even need it, because every doctor is medically, ethically, morally, and legally obliged to act in your interest. There is no obligation of any doctor to prolong a life of no quality. That's universally accepted medical ethics. So in fact, you should not even, excuse me, you should not even need that document.
But things do differ. You know, somebody might, a doctor, you know, we always hear about these things and say, you know, somebody's in their 90s, but they still want to fight for whatever life that they can have. Or somebody's in their 90s and is quite happy to transition to, you know, towards death. But it does differ from person to person.
Yes. And that's why you need to have this conversation.
So if my document says pull the plug, is the doctor morally obliged to do it?
I think you say that one more time and Wendy's going to get up and smack you.
I know, but
she hates, you know, this is radio, so you can't see Wendy's body language, but every time Howard says the word pull the plug, Wendy actually visibly flings herself back in her chair and because she can't stand the expression, will you stop using it, please?
You see, Wendy thinks this is a hard conversation.
I don't.
But it's actually
Wendy of all people doesn't. That's why she's here having it.
It's the easiest conversation to have. It's about the quality of life and the decisions that I can take now to ensure that I can die with dignity.
Howard, I'm going to even say that I'm not even sure you're living with dignity. I don't know. I don't want to be rude.
At some point, I found dignity.
He wants to have it somewhere in his life. Right.
Okay, they don't have to pull the plug. They should just, like, inject me with something.
All right.
Is that a bad thing?
Howard, listen, let's just go back to your scenario because I can see that you're not going to let go of it.
Look, I don't think you're Dr. Kevorkian, but, like, help me here.
I'm not Dr. Kevorkian. So, you are in a car accident. You are admitted to hospital. There is no prospect of reasonable recovery. You don't have to be put on a ventilator. If you are put on life support and it is then found out that there is going to be no prospect of reasonable recovery, that is what your advance directive is going to cover. On the other hand, the doctor may very well, as very, very many ethically, morally acceptable doctors will do, come to you and say, you know what? Let's talk to the family.
Mm.
There's absolutely no prospect of reasonable recovery. There's something called the doctrine of futility. And in terms of that doctrine of futility, it's ethically unacceptable for a doctor to mechanically keep you alive if there's no prospect of recovery.
So I just want to, because we are going to run out of time, I just want to know this. Is I now go to my lawyer. I'm presuming this knowledge is going to sit with a lawyer, or do I go to my doctor? Who do I go to is my first question. To have this document drawn up. And secondly, give me the three or four basic decisions that I'm going to make and capture in this document.
Right. You can go to your lawyer to have it done. Mm. And when it's done, you must certainly give it to your doctor.
Right.
You can just download it off Dignity SA.
Right.
And there is a very acceptable, simple
form. Okay, so it's Dignity SA.
Dignity
SA. We look at the form. We download
dignitysa.org.za.co.za.
Well, I'll tell you that right now. Don't worry. You carry on with that. And what are they going to ask? What are we going to be asked to contemplate?
Let me just tell you something, Howard. I know you've asked a question. If anyone has any problem as regards this, they can come and talk
to me. Oh, I was going to get to that anyway. I have no doubt. And it's called dignitysa.org. That's where you're going to look, and you'll have, it's dying with dignity, et cetera, okay. And you'll get those documents there. What's it going to ask us to contemplate?
It's going to ask you who you should want to have as a medical proxy. Mm-hmm. That's important. That's very important.
Right.
And the rest is, it's very simple. It's just going to say, I do not want to be kept alive by artificial means should there be no prospect of reasonable recovery. Mm. That's in a nutshell.
Right, what
in
it
a
is.
Nutshell. The most important thing, because that form can be filled in 5 minutes, the most important thing is that you do it.
Yeah, I think we all progress.
You do it.
Why do you think it is that we all, is it fear? We just don't want to confront this. Do we really think it's just never going to apply to us? Which is an absurdity, obviously.
It is fear.
Mm.
It's the fact that you just don't want to talk about it. People often run away. We all run away from things that are
uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
Do you see it as a generational thing? Are younger people more open to be discussing these things? Maybe because it seems further, or maybe because people have grown up in a world where they're more open about feelings, and or are you seeing this across the board that people are starting to have these conversations?
Yes, they certainly are starting to have these conversations. And the reason that you have to have this conversation is then you can focus, when that person becomes ill, on looking after that person. You can focus
according to
on
their
it
wishes.
According to their wishes, instead of all the conflict in the family when you sit in a hospital passage and you have four siblings that all have different ideas. It's very difficult to have harmony and tranquility and really give that person a quality of life. And also, You have to be an empowered patient. And if you are not able to be an empowered patient, see that your children are. See that your siblings are. Be an advocate of that person. When you walk into that hospital, you know what you want. You are a consumer. You're not a lapdog.
Well, a hospital is a very disempowering place. Very, you know, I was visiting somebody there last week, and it was in the surgery unit, and everybody was in these obviously these green surgical horrible things with all sorts of body parts exposed, and I was just looking at these people, and then one by one, you know, they would go into the bathroom, get dressed, because the, you know, and suddenly they looked like people again,
yes.
And they went from looking like these bland. Almost anonymous faces to real people. And I thought, this is unbelievably interesting to me.
It is.
Yeah, fascinating.
Can I ask one last question from my side?
Yes.
Let us say my organs are fine. I'm not on life support, but I'm basically brain dead. Yes. What are my rights?
Well, that may very well medically be called a persistent vegetative state. And if there is what's called a PVS, there is no doubt that you must be taken off life support. I want to just tell you very quickly, because I know that I'm pressed for time. I had an incident where someone phoned me and said, do you know that my grandmother has been on life support in private health care? She's 92 years old. She's been in ICU for 30 days. There's no prospect of reasonable recovery, and the doctors will not take her off life support. I phoned up this private healthcare. I spoke to their risk department, and I said, that patient has to be taken off life support. They said to me, it's not us, it's the doctors.
Mm.
I said, I don't quite care who it is, but if it's not done, we are going to have to approach the courts. And strangely enough, by the next morning, she passed away.
Mike Luber says, once connected to a machine, you cannot disconnect legally and by Jewish halakha. A living will is to avoid being put on the machine in the first place. My father was in a neuro ICU ventilator for 4 months. I went to the highest Jewish sources in Israel, and they told me you can't switch off. You can indirectly not administer antibiotics, etc. That's from Mike Luba. And there's a terribly sad story. It's exactly what you're talking about, where a person was on this type of life support for 4 months. And what that does to the family, let alone the person who might be cognizant or not cognizant. The suffering is just absolutely awful.
To avoid this issue, Rabbi Tetz, as you would know, is the absolute expert on halakha and medical ethics. And at a lecture that I went to, he was telling us about a ventilator that's going to be invented, or maybe even is invented, with a time switch. So in fact, it will go for a certain period, and that will be able to deal with this issue, because if after a few days or a few hours or a few weeks or whatever, it will turn off, and in order to activate it, you'd have to reset it again.
Fascinating. Isn't that an unbelievable concept?
There is one other alternative. We can always go
load
to
shedding.
The load shedding is one.
Or I think load shedding is the way to go.
Or to the pastor who just resurrected.
Yes, no, well, that's the other option. But I think you have to be dead first before you get resurrected.
This is the first time I've laughed so much giving a talk about end of life. But if anyone would like me to come and
talk to
them,
okay, so that's what I
want
to. I think you are an incredible resource. I think you are, you know your stuff. You're not afraid to have these conversations. I think you are a real, really, really valuable asset in this area. If somebody wants to have this conversation, sadly, I have no doubt that a lot of our listeners are going through all sorts of things, whether they might be ill, they might have somebody who they love who's heading towards, sadly, a situation like that, or even if everyone's healthy and they just want to understand this, how do they get hold of you?
They can phone me. I'll give you my number.
Okay. Do you have an email address that they could use? Let's do that. What is your email address?
W Shakanovsky with an E.
Right. W Shakanovsky.
That could be difficult to spell. I think you may have to
spell that.
S H A K E N O V S K Y.
wendyandjohn@gmail.com. All right. And if you do want to get hold of Wendy, and if you aren't able to do that, then just send me a message, and certainly we will pass on your number to Wendy, and she will give you a call. Mike says the total hospital bill was 1.9 million rand. And that is to have his father on life support for 4 months, and I mean, despite the cost, the agony of that must have been tremendous. I think these are extremely important conversations to have any time so that we do know that these things are taken care of, and speak to your family about them as well. You know, even if you don't want to fill in the form, at least discuss these things and let them know what your and I can't see the point of not filling in a form. As Wendy said, it takes 5 minutes to do. Download it, fill it in, and then it's done. But discuss this with your doctor, discuss this with your families, so that everybody's aware of exactly what it is that you would want when you are in a position that you are not able to say it, that you're not able to communicate it. We've got just a few moments left. If you do want to send us a message, 34519 or 061-895-1019. Dov, I see your message talking about oncologists and dollar signs. I don't want to go into that. I think I really believe that we are very, very blessed, certainly in Johannesburg and in South Africa, to have the most incredibly professional people. And I don't believe that people are just treating for the sake of money. It might be that they treat to Wendy's looking at me strangely, but I do believe that, Wendy. I do believe it might be, and your comment you made to me the other day, which I absolutely loved, was there are some oncologists that will give you chemo till the day after you die. Wendy mentioned that the other day, but I'm still of the naive belief that it is around. It's because they want to cure people, and not because they want to do it for the money. Wendy clearly disagrees with me, and that's cool. You see her body language. One doesn't need to be an expert. Howard, what do you think?
I'm thinking we're talking about people on life support, but did you see the picture of the Queen yesterday, who is 92 years old, who is looking like she will go to 150?
Yeah, she is remarkable.
Remarkable. Yeah. And she threw this big party, which I don't know if you were invited to celebrate Charles's 50 years.
I wasn't.
It
did sound incredibly boring.
Wales.
The big news about that party was that Meghan and Kate were both there for the first time. They seemed to be getting on well, according to royal watchers. So there is talk in the royal marketplace that feud is now over, Howard.
So I think, Wendy, the moral is all of this. At age 150, let us all just go to sleep and not wake up.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And just see that we've got medical aid until we're 150.
Oh, man. There's a brocha for you. A modern brocha. May your medical aid last longer than you do. It is about to go 9 o'clock. Hope you have a fantastic Wednesday. We'll be back Thursday. Throwback Thursday tomorrow. Don't forget to join us 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.